Yarmulke. Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
Welcome. I feel like this is going to be a good episode.
This is our hot episode.
Yeah, this is the episode where we kind of want to talk about some wonderful
sex.
Hey, Zara.
Hey, Tez.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day hangover.
Happy Muslim Valentine's Day.
What?
I should say.
On today's Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, we've got a packed podcast for you. Sex, gin, hijabi Barbies, Yazidi woman soldiers fighting Daesh, not ISIS, the GOP circus, creeping Sharia, Good Muslim awards for gummy bear burkas, and of course, we issue our fatwas. We've got a sexy show for you today. In this episode of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, let's talk about sex. Can we say sex?
I think we can say sex.
Is it halal?
Sex is so halal because you need to have sex to make babies. And I think babies are halal.
So babies make it halal.
Yeah, I think that's how you make halal sex.
If it doesn't make a baby, it's not halal. Is that what
I think was, according to this one book that I read, yes. But we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, we are going to talk about what makes sex halal. As the authorities on sex on behalf of all Muslims.
Yeah. So now for the main event. Let's talk about sex.
Sounds really hot when you say it.
I was trying to be sexy when I said it. I don't know if that worked. Zara, did you talk about sex growing up in your house?
Like making fun of people who had it.
Really?
Well, that was like the little kid thing to do when I was like 7, 8 years old, 10 years old, even all the way up to 12. Sex was like, they're probably having sex over there. Like we didn't know what the hell it was.
I had no idea what sex was growing up. I think I talked about this in our podcast, that the way I learned about sex, my mom showed me this science book and showed this diagram of the uterus. And that was kind of how I learned, you know, about sex. And I didn't learn about like the action of sex until like my friend from down the street, I think this was around when I was like 8 or 9, she brought over her Ken doll, because I wasn't allowed to have Ken dolls, but you know, she brought over her Ken doll. And she would make my Barbie doll and her Ken doll roll around on like this makeshift bed, and they were apparently having sex. And that's how I learned what sex was.
That is one of my favorite stories. Because there's also, so she like wouldn't let you have the white girl Barbies. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. That's the same friend. Yeah. She also would not let me play with white Barbie dolls. I was only allowed to play with the black Barbie dolls. I think so. We're kind of joking around about this. But like one of the reasons why we wanted to talk about sex in this episode was we wanted to talk about the shame around sex. And I was kind of inspired to want to bring this up on this episode because I was talking to a friend of mine, Nadia, who works for this organization in Chicago called Heart. And what they are doing is they are putting out a book called The Sex Talk. And this book is going to be for Muslim women, and I think Muslim men, about what to do on their wedding night, or what to do when they finally do have sex. And it was inspired actually from a conversation that was happening on Love Inshallah's website, which was answering a question that someone had posed to the advice columnist, asking, you know, what am I supposed to do? And there's just so much unknown, I would say, for the really conservative Muslim folks who were never really exposed to, you know, sexual things. So, yeah, that's why we're talking about it. You can check it out. Go to heartwomenandgirls.org. The book should be out in the next couple months. Actually, when I was talking about this book to my friend, she was talking about how back in the, I believe in the 50s and 60s, there was a book called The Joy of Sex, which also was kind of a how to have sex handbook for the housewives in those days. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, when sex is so hidden and so secretive, it turns into so much shame. And then it turns into something that's you know, haram, and so you're not supposed to understand it. And I think that's so terrible. That's such a terrible way to be.
Yeah, I can't say enough about how much I love this project. I love also that it's crowdsourced.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that says so much about what the Muslim community that is supporting this book represents, is saying, needs, you know. I love that. It's also interesting to me because it's so curious to see conversations around sex coming up as this sort of like community that has also developed as a Muslim community in response to all the anti-Muslim rhetoric in the United States.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I hate the word community when I talk about Muslims because I feel like we all get like lumped in as this like one ogre, you know, of Islam, even though Islam is spread amongst like 36,000 countries. And at the same time, there really is in America this sort of like Muslim community forming in the media in response to all of the anti-Islamic rhetoric.
Yeah. I think it's also coming up because of projects like Love Inshallah, projects like our podcast, projects like the Totally Radical Muslim Zines that we're part of. There's a lot of Muslim women that are finally able to voice themselves in this really amazing way, who just happen to be Muslim. And I think that's been really fun to be a part of that process, too.
That's kind of what I mean, is that like in this the community like Love Inshallah keeps recentering the narrative around what it means to be a Muslim woman and to talk about sex, or a Muslim man to talk about sex.
Yeah.
Cisgendered, gay, trans, all of these conversations are coming up in ways that they never before were a part of the discourse. And it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, super awesome. So in my house growing up, we had this book that was called Al-Jinn, and it was a book that was written by this scholar in Southern California, a Muslim scholar that my father was really into, named Ahmed Sakhar. And so when I was fascinated about jinns. So I was thumbing through it, and then there was this whole section about sex, saying that if you don't say Allah's name while having sex, then a jinn will fold up into the penis and you'll be having sex with the jinn.
What?
I know. So I was just picturing, like, what if there was like this whole generation of Muslim youth who wanted to learn about jinns, and then they read this and then they were like scarred with having sex with jinns.
Okay, hold up. Number one, you have to say Allah during sex.
Yeah, of course. Like, oh my God, you know, but
like, oh my Allah. Oh my Allah. Or maybe is it yalla, 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 yalla. Would you come already? Yalla, yalla, yalla. Can we get a move on here? Like, I've already had mine. I'm waiting for yours. I'm chafing.
I'm learning so much about you right now.
As a married woman, I can say I have incredible sex with my husband constantly. So much so that I feel bored by incredible sex. But then it's so incredible.
I feel like he kind of set you up to say that right now.
I'm reading off a card.
Awesome.
So your husband's penis becomes a demon.
Yes.
But does that mean that you're going to have better sex? Like, is demon sex hot?
I was waiting for your joke on that one.
That's not a joke. I'm genuinely curious.
I don't know. I guess you as a married woman will need to try this out.
This just gives a whole new meaning to Ghostbusters. That's all I'm going to say. Yes. There's something strange in this neighborhood. All right. You didn't say Allah. Jinn, penis.
Oh, my God. Okay. For folks who do not want to have sex with jinns, there is something else in the market now. there is this thing called the Halal Sex Shop, which just opened up in the UK. And it was posted up on Broadly this past month. This is going to be Britain's first online sex emporium for Muslims. And I don't know, when Zara and I were talking about this, we were just like, what does that mean? What is it about, you know, vibrators and lubes that make it haram or halal? I read something that said that they have gelatin-free lube, which totally made sense to me then. I was like, oh yeah, gelatin, you know, that comes from pigs. So that makes sense that that would be like a halal lube. And what were you thinking when you read this, Zara?
Well, at first I was like really curious what else they could actually be providing and how this like business would be sustainable.
Yeah.
They wrote, here's a quote from the article. I'll say it in my best British accent. Britain's first online sex emporium for Muslims has just opened, complete with Sharia compliant lubricant and rabbit vibrators. Twatty twat 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 twat.
I don't think that was in there.
That's my British impersonation.
Got it. Got it.
Sharia compliant. I like that. That's going to definitely be a catchphrase that comes up.
Ben Carson's going to love that. I think this is going to be great because I think that with all the shame associated with sex and with sexuality that, you know, a halal sex shop will be helpful. It'll be good for people to have a healthy sex life and to be able to access toys and like things to make it easier and more accepting.
You know, what's interesting is my husband still makes me buy the condoms at the grocery store.
I just don't understand why that's why.
Like he gets embarrassed.
That's so funny. So what happens when you show up to the counter and you're like, yeah, I'm going to buy this box of 100 condoms?
I am glad you asked because do you know what happens? I get hit on.
No.
Every time.
Even with your wedding ring on your finger?
That makes it worse. It makes it worse. It's like my wedding ring is like, can you out alpha this band? It's an invitation. I thought it would be some kind of protection, but no. Oh, to be a man with a gin penis.
So there's other folks that are also having sex in the Middle East. ISIS is having sex.
Yeah. ISIS sex. Let's talk about that. First of all, ew, awful, creepy, because it's rape. Let's be clear. Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff happening with sex and being Muslim and terminology. Jihadis is a new coined term.
Jihadis?
Yeah. To be jihad. And a jihadi.
I think you're jihad.
I think you're jihad, Tez. Jihad to the max. You're so jihad, you bring my gin out.
Oh.
Oh. Jihadis is a term that people are using, and Trevor Noah has this great clip of it on The Daily Show, though I kind of have mixed feelings about this. Check it out.
Analysts say this blog is a recruitment tool for ISIS, targeting mostly women in a Match.com style.
So now ISIS has a dating website. I can just imagine girls telling their friends about the guy they met.
So I've been talking to this guy. He's kind of a bad boy. Like, so bad. No, like, really, he's evil.
So what did you think of that?
I thought that was really interesting. I mean, we've been talking about how these women are going over to the Middle East to have, you know, to give themselves up for the cause, for the ISIS cause. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it through sex, I guess. I don't know. It's just, I guess they're being useful. It makes me mad. Obviously, it makes me mad and upset. But, yeah.
Well, the thing that really bothered me about this is it's already not said enough that ISIS is killing Muslims. And a lot of Muslims, and it's committing genocide specifically against the Yazidis and the actual jihadis here. The actual term should be used with the Yazidi women who call themselves the Force of the Sun Ladies. And there's this awesome article on them that'll be on our homework links page. They've taken up arms in the quest for revenge, but also to preserve the future of their race. Because ISIS has committed genocide against them. They've killed thousands upon thousands of Yazidi men and raped Yazidi women.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the Yazidis in a few episodes ago, and it's just so atrocious what's happening there.
So the bit that Trevor Noah says, he says, there's one joke in there that I really love, that I feel like really captures what it is that I'm seeking as a viewer.
To me, this just sounds like dating in your 20s, you know? Yeah, it's all or nothing. Today is all there is. It's you and me against the Western world. And then when it doesn't work out, to the left, to the left. All of your remains in a box to the left.
That's funny.
Why is that funny?
Because that does what we need. That points out how what ISIS is doing is genocide, rape, murder. And it's that kind of like, kind of humor that this needs. What we definitely don't need is glossing over ISIS's attacks on other Muslims with a lot of dating humor and Tinder humor that just feeds back into isn't all of the ways that there can't be peace in the Middle East so silly? Why can't these people just figure it out?
Yeah.
We have seen a war on faith.
Is there a Muslim problem in the world?
Absolutely.
I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation.
What's the presidential way of saying this? President Obama went to visit a Baltimore mosque last month.
Get out of town.
Yeah. So actually, this is pretty interesting because President Obama has not visited a mosque. And this is his last year in office. So it's been 8 years. Some in the Muslim community have been saying, why hasn't this been done sooner? But I think it's good that he did it. I mean, it's a little late, but like I think it's great that he finally visited a mosque. And what did you think about it, Zara?
Okay, so first of all, when he went to the mosque here, he said something really important that the whole world needed to hear. He said, you fit in here, right here.
You're right where you belong. You're part of America, too. You're not Muslim or American. You're Muslim and American.
And he pointed out that the majority religion in the United States is Christian. And he talked about his duties as a Christian and the freedom of religion.
And in the talk that he did with America after the San Bernardino shooting, he made it so much about us and them.
Exactly. He kept saying, Muslims are also American and we... And then continue to talk as Americans who are not Muslim.
Right.
Yeah.
What I loved about the Baltimore mosque visit was that he was also able to talk to local community organizers in that visit. And it was so great to see my fellow activists and organizers have the opportunity to really talk to him about what was happening in the community and do some advocacy about the organizing work that's been going on the ground for Muslims. Okay, someone else in the news now for Election Watch is Ben Carson. And he was recently quoted saying that Muslims that believe in democracy are schizophrenic because all Muslims are supposed to believe in Sharia law. How do you feel about that?
Do I have to feel something about that?
Zara, because you've been saying that Muslim crazy should be in the DSM. So I feel like Ben Carson with this statement is just kind of supporting you.
I feel supported, actually, now that you mention it.
Yeah, I feel like Ben Carson's got your back on this.
You know, for as much as Ben Carson uses Muslims to stay in the news and to be a part of the news cycle, I feel like he could give back just a little bit more.
Yeah.
I love that, like, the GOP just keeps, like, harping on Sharia law while, meanwhile, they have all this Saudi Arabia love and are like, Iran is evil, Saudi Arabia's the best, Qatar's the best. We'll just ignore that Sharia law is a place where, like, they actually are adherent to Sharia law in those countries.
Yeah, in South Carolina, they just started banning Sharia law. There was a bill that just passed when they went back into session, and that was, like, their top priority. I mean, forget that, like, the average income there is $10,000 below national income, but that was what they wanted to address.
Yeah, they're 43 out of 50 in their school system. They have some race issues. There was maybe... People remember maybe this white Southern South Carolina gunman that killed 12 black people in a church. But Sharia law is really our top priority.
Oh, so terrible. That's Nikki Haley's state.
The House passed that bill. And there's actually a quote in this article I'm looking at right here that The bill sponsor, State Representative Chip Limehouse, acknowledged that there has never been a Sharia defense in the state, and he wanted to make sure no one could try that defense in the state.
So dumb. So dumb.
And the reason why the House is addressing it is because they want to make sure it gets to the Senate, because this is big.
Oh, so terrible.
I mean, it's just a way that they're, you know, of course, using anti-Muslim rhetoric to freak people out so that they forget that their spouses and don't have jobs and their kids don't have good schools and that they're struggling because of their government.
Yeah.
And that's why I say thank God and Jesus for creeping Sharia.
All right, creeping Sharia. Okay, so my creeping Sharia is back to my favorite topic, Barbie dolls. And it's a Nigerian student who is taking all of her Barbie dolls and putting a hijab on them. And she has this Instagram account. And I think that's a good way of retaking the Barbie doll, which was such a tool of iconic Western beauty. And she's reimagining it with a hijab. Why are you saying no?
Barbie. No.
What don't you like about it?
I mean, this is just, to me, this is like creeping patriarchy. This is the creeping patriarchy segment now. Like, yeah.
What don't you like about it? Did you not play with Barbies growing up?
I totally played with Barbies, and they made me miserable, just like Cinderella.
Oh, what do you mean? Expand.
Well, okay, first of all, the tag on this Instagram says, you know, she's an alternative role model. No, please. Please don't do that. Please don't make her the alternative role model. I don't need hijabi to be the alternative role model. I also hate that there's this term hijabi. Like, I don't know, women are so objectified as it is, and it feels like more and more the Western use of this terminology is to, like, make hijab just another form of objectifying women. It's just another way of objectifying women, turning them into objects. I know that also, like, saying hijabi and hijabi is a way that we take those terms back. I'm in a place where I'm not at ease with it, and I definitely, like, I love that this girl was able to take her Barbie and make it so that it reflected her. That's awesome. Do I love Barbie? No. And I set my Barbies on fire as a kid. That's what I did.
You were like my sister. My sister used to take all my Barbie dolls and rip off the heads and then throw them down the stairs. So you and my sister are the same. I mean, I guess the one issue that I do have with the hijabi Instagram account is that what she's using is clearly a white Barbie doll for all of the pictures. But what I like about it is that it's basically copying fashion Instagram accounts. And so a lot of the fashion that she's putting on these Barbie dolls is clothing that you often see hijabi fashionistas wear.
I'm down with that. My creeping Sharia is the Saudi support. On behalf of the GOP, that's all like, Iran is evil. They're the bad guys. We love Saudi Arabia. They only do good things. Basically, while the GOP is simultaneously saying, we don't want Sharia law in the United States, they're also simultaneously aligning themselves with one of the, propagandators of Sharia law.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the hypocrisy that is the U.S. government.
And I feel like that's what Sharia and creeping Sharia is all about. It's the hypocrisy of how it's used.
It's almost like the hypocrisy of being a good Muslim and a bad Muslim.
I wish somebody had a podcast about that.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, it's time for our Good Muslim Award.
Woohoo!
I've got one that I'm really excited about, Taz.
Okay, what are you excited about?
Edible burkas.
Oh, you mean like sexy edible underwear?
Yeah, but a burka over your whole body.
That is a lot of work, I have to say. That's a lot of fruit roll-ups to eat through to get to the good stuff.
I feel like Americans can do it. I feel like right? we could get there.
Yeah, I feel like the edible burqa is like an American invention, right? It's like you have to eat through a lot to get to the sexy part.
It totally is, because it's like consumption of women in the female form, of course.
So tell me more about this edible burqa.
Afghan-born artist Behnaz Babazadeh hopes to spark a conversation about the burqa by wrapping herself in candy. It looks delicious.
The pictures look amazing on this. I think it was really artful how she put it together.
In her TEDx talk, she talks about how she came up with this idea, her relationship with hijab, how she grew up wearing it, how the definition and reaction to the people around her changed when she left Afghanistan and came here in a way that you would not expect. She was really comfortable wearing a hijab in Afghanistan, and it was very much a part of her sort of identity as a kid growing up. It was her school uniform. And when she came here, she felt the Islamophobia of the security guard. And all of a sudden, she was a problem. And it's such a great TED Talk. And I highly recommend it. Can't say enough about it. Good Muslim Award. What's yours, Taz?
I kind of want to give my Good Muslim Award to Asia McClain, even though she's not Muslim. But Serial is back. Adnan Syed's trial is back. This past couple weeks, the trial's been back on, and Asia McClain took the stage, and she was the one that was, like, not taking the podium for a while. And so for people who have not been following, y'all should really follow. Serial was on site for 5 days of the trial, and they have, like, daily podcasts. Rabia's podcast, Undisclosed, was also on site for the trial. Even though she wasn't allowed in, she had to, like, do her podcasting from the local Dunkin' Donuts. I am such a huge fan of the Adnan Syed Serial case, so I've been rapt with attention on this one.
I love that award right there. Asia. Yes.
Asia, right?
Yes.
Like, oh my God, it's about time she took the stage.
Free Adnan.
Free Adnan. So it's time to get awkward with our next segment, Awkward Ask a Muslim. And I was thinking about this. I feel like I haven't had many Awkward Ask a Muslims lately, but I think it's because I haven't been talking to strangers lately. So I'll start with mine. So my Awkward Ask a Muslim. So we went away to Big Bear for New Year's. We went away for like 3 or 4 days. And the whole time we were there, all my friends were drinking, and they kept asking me why I don't drink. And I kept having to answer in different ways. And that was my awkward ask a Muslim.
That's so awkward.
I know. I mean, Zara, you drink, so you don't have to deal with this question.
No, you know what? It's like a double whammy because, and to be honest, to be totally honest, part of the reason why I started drinking was because I was so sick of being asked that question.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It really affected me a lot in college.
Yeah.
Drove me nuts. I mean, of course, I was curious. I was curious about alcohol, and I wanted to try it and see what's the big deal.
Right.
But here's the thing. Like, the why don't you drink question, first of all, then immediately as a woman, I don't know if you get this, are you pregnant?
No, I don't get that. But that is what I say to people when people ask why I don't drink. They're like, why don't you drink? I'll say, I'm pregnant. And they're like, oh. And then they're like,
Genius.
Even though I never drank because of my religion, I don't think that's why I don't drink anymore. I think I just stopped thinking that Islam was the only reason why I don't drink. I just saw people who were drinking around me, and I just felt no need to be like that. I like being the designated driver everywhere I go. I enjoy being sober. I have fun being who I am, and I don't feel the need to have to be dependent on alcohol.
I think there's a task rabbit for people who love being the designated driver.
Do I get paid for that? Is it called
totally.
Uber? So the thing that I usually say that really stops people from asking me further questions, because I basically just hate having to answer this. And I usually don't like lying. But the one lie that I do say is that I don't drink because I had a boyfriend that died in a drunk driving accident.
That would stop me from asking you anything else.
Yeah. And I think it's so great. I love saying that. And I have no shame. I have no pity, shame, or anything with saying that lie.
I'm a fan of that. I think that's kind of an awesome showstopper right there.
Yeah. And then they leave me alone. Then they like start thinking about themselves, and then it's great. Either I say that, or then I say it mixes bad with my mental health drugs.
But see, that's actually true for me. Like I take.
There you go.
Yeah, I take anti-anxiety medicine sometimes, and I can't drink. And then I don't want to have that conversation with somebody at the dinner table.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so absurd about this question is like when people ask me. They just assume because I'm a Muslim, that's what the reason is. When there are lots of people who don't drink, and there's many, many reasons why people don't drink. And it's like, why does there need to be a concise explanation for everything? So I had to answer that question at least 5 times on this trip, and it was really bothersome. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a fatwa to declare.
Declare it.
I would like to declare a fatwa on the web designer for the FBI's Countering Violent Extremism website.
I second your fatwa.
Because have you seen this? So the FBI just dropped this website this past month. It's called their Don't Be a Puppet program, and it's geared towards teens, Muslim teens, to try to convince them not to become an extremist. And the website is so stupid because it's very like, it's like when an old person is trying to cater to a teenager, which is basically what's happening in this website. It's so, so over the top. So apparently on the website, there's an actual game that you can play called The Slippery Slope to Extremism, in which you are a fast-moving animal trying to escape, you know, objects. There's a certificate that you can get at the end, which says, now you are not a puppet. They have these like hokey, don't be a puppet logos and like a wooden puppet that's there. It's so terrible. I will not link to this on our website, but I will link to the Gizmodo, article about it because their column was really funny about it.
The FBI site also has symbols to look out for.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like my issue with Countering Violent Extremism. This is a program that the FBI has been trying to implement in the Muslim community is it's all about Muslims ratting each other out. And I just think that this particular program is so like it was as if they had an even focus group, the website with teenagers to really understand if it would resonate or not. And I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a really bad repercussions if kids do see this website. And I think it just wasn't a smart strategy on behalf of the FBI. I think it was a terrible, terrible strategy. And I think one of the things that came out this past month is the ACLU is putting in a FOIA request to the FBI to get all the documents that they've created around countering violent extremism programs just to see what the government's actually doing. So props to the ACLU for pushing that out.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. It's terrifying that this kind of stuff is also coming from the FBI and the news media. It doesn't stop. And that's why my fatwa is on the Daily Mail.
The Daily Mail, of course.
I'm so sick of the, like, they, over there, they can, in the UK, they can make up facts. And there doesn't seem to be any recourse. And I am, like, I haven't done any research on this, and I'm totally fine going forward with a fatwa on the Daily Mail with no research because that's their style. I do send gin out on behalf of all my fatwas.
Gin.
Gin to your penis. Gin. Boom.
That is a good way to close this segment, Zara. and to close our show. We're at the end of our show. Gins are in all of your penises now because I'm sure none of you say bismillah before you have sex. So now we all know that, you know, everyone's having sex with gins.
Gin in my dick. Gin in my dick. Oh, no. Oh, no. What's with this trick?
So what do you have going on for the rest of the month until our next show?
Other than gin in my dick? I'm going to be on Snap Judgment. What?
So exciting.
It's at the Paramount Theater, February 27th. What you got going on, Tess?
I have the release of my chapbook called M-Dash and Ellipses. That should be out next week. You can get it now on Amazon. I'll also be doing a story at Family Reunion in L.A. I'll be talking about my hot doctor. And I am speaking at a few conferences coming up. So just follow me on Twitter. I'll be posting things up there. And Zara, we also have something really exciting, which I think we can announce now.
I was just wondering if we can announce it yet. Go for it.
Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is going to be at South by Southwest on March 15th. We'll be doing a live show out of the Dropbox studio down at South by Southwest. We're so excited to go down. I've always wanted to go down to South by Southwest. We're super stoked. There's going to be some amazing acts that are down there, and we're going to have a lot of fun. So if you're in Austin or if you're going to South by Southwest, please do come by our show. Ping us on our website. We'll get you some special tickets to make sure that you get front row seats. Do let us know if you're there.
And thank you, Dropbox, for sponsoring us.
Yeah, thanks, Dropbox. And that's it. That was our sexy time with Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. We hope that you're all going to be smoking cigarettes now because, you know, you just had an amazing sexy time with us. I don't know.
No, don't.
Was that terrible? No, don't smoke. Smoking's bad. Don't. What? Zara, what do you do after sex?
After sex, I like to open up the Quran and say thank you to Allah.
Oh, mashallah. Mashallah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
No burka, no. No burka, no.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurmash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Nu, that's ZAHRANOO. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
No work at home.